Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Tuesday, May 31st, 2016. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. Please do that. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is a hot, sweltering Tuesday night. I just got home and I'm sorry the show's late. I had recorded one on Sunday, but it just didn't meet my standards, you guys. It just didn't meet my standards. There were some good parts in it, but overall I was just like, I was all over the place on this one. And normally I'm all over the place, but this was like, whoa, Chris, can you find a map? Can you recenter? Can you get back to your starting point and evolve, you know, and really, you know, the podcast was off. It was off the rails. So this is episode 169. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. I hope everybody had a safe and happy. I hope everyone had a safe and happy Memorial Day weekend. I hope your summer is starting off nice. I hope that you're staying cool in the hot weather. I had a pretty fun, eventful holiday weekend. I had some shows at the Comedy Club of Williamsburg in historic Colonial Williamsburg, Virginia. And so I left, got up really early on Friday morning, and I went down to see my parents because my parents are on the way down. And I told them, you know, I'm going to stop by and see you guys and then just head on down to do the shows. And I got there at like 9 o'clock to my parents' house, ring the doorbell. Nothing. Nobody's there. And I call them. I'm like, hey, where are you guys? And they were like, we're at the doctor's office. And they were doing their appointments. And I was like, look, y'all ain't even tell me, young, that y'all was going to be gone. And so I just went down. Didn't get to see the parental units that day. But I just drove on down, and it wasn't too much traffic. I was surprised at how light the traffic was. There were definitely some spots, but it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I stopped at a Fuddruckers at a truck stop, and that was good. Ate like an asshole. That was just the start of eating like an. I went to Sonic after a show that I had. I had a show on Thursday night at Paisano's in Rutherford, New Jersey, and that was a lot of fun. I was nervous about that show because I hadn't been up in like a week and a little, maybe even more than a week, and I was like, oh my god, do I know how to do comedy again? Do I know how to do comedy anymore? And apparently I did, because I was amazing. No, I had a fun set, and it was good. I was working with MC was Natty Bumper Car and out of New Jersey, and Tom McTiernan was the headliner, and I featured, and it was cool. It was a good crowd. It was a big crowd, the room was pretty interesting because it's in an Italian restaurant in Rutherford, New Jersey, and it's like, you know, you have there's like one room, there's like three or four different rooms, sections to this restaurant, and then the back room, it was just this huge space, and it was interesting because you had to like play to different sections of the room, maybe in like I would say three sections. So that was interesting, and I had a good time, and I was like, oh, okay, I know how to do comedy. I'm ready for the shows and whatnot. And I get to go down to Williamsburg, and I didn't realize this until I was talking to my parents on Sunday when I was at my parents' house. And I remember Busch Gardens Williamsburg is basically the reason that I'm talking to you guys right now on the podcast. Indirectly, one of the reasons that I'm trying to break into show business. I'm sure I told this story on the show before or some version of it. But when I was a kid, when I was about 12 years old, I was moving from one Catholic school, St. Francis Xavier, to Mount Calvary Catholic School, which is St. Francis Xavier is in Southeast D.C. and Mount Calvary is in Forestville, Maryland. So I did 7th and 8th grade preschool to 6th grade at St. Francis Xavier, and then 7th and 8th grade at Mount Calvary. And so when I got to Mount Calvary, their big thing was to have a spring musical. And if you were in the spring musical, you automatically got to go to Busch Gardens Williamsburg. And I had never been at the time. So I was like, oh, I just want to go be in the play so I can go to Busch Gardens Williamsburg. But I think in the back of my head, in the back of my mind as a 12, 13 year old kid, like I always had like an affinity, a love for the arts as far as plays and stuff is concerned. And so I was hooked. And ever since then, I've been hooked. And now you get me blabbing on a podcast talking about my adventures in show business and me blabbing about current events. So thank you, Busch Gardens Williamsburg, a brewery and a theme park. So that was pretty neat. And the hotel that I stayed at was the DoubleTree, and it was literally right next door to Busch Gardens Williamsburg. So that was pretty cool for stuff to kind of come full circle from a 12-year-old kid to being a 36-year-old. So 24 years later, I want to say that's right. I was at a pretty decent point in my career. You have to acknowledge those many milestones. And my dad reminded me, like, oh, didn't you want to go to Busch Garden? And that's why you got it. I was like, oh yeah, that's totally true. I had forgotten about that, you know? So that was really cool. And I had a good time. I was closing out those shows. I headlined those shows. I did. It was three comedians, Jimmy Merritt and Vinny. Dylan. I don't want to mess up Dylan's last name. So Jimmy Merritt was there. And Dylan Vatalana. So it's three of us. And I closed those shows out, and it was fun. My cousin came. That was cool. He came to both shows, and we hung out after the shows. And it was great talking to my cousin, hanging out with him, because he lives in Hampton. And he's doing well. And it was just great. It was just a great weekend. A nice little excursion. It wasn't too far, but I did do a lot of driving. And, but that's them's the breaks. And what else did I do? I had been to Williamsburg before. My aunt, my cousin's mom worked at the outlets down there for a little while. And I vaguely remember it, but as an adult, I was noticing like how many they just have everything. The South has all of the restaurants. And I don't know why that is. I forget my uncle who lives in Newport News, my cousin's father. I forget what he said when I was down like in that area last year. And somebody let me know what this is, because it was sort of like they bring everything to the South first, or that particular region, because it's such a like a wide swath of different people. I don't know what the reason is for that, but it just seems like everything is down there. And I remember that as a kid, like you guys have all the stores. It was just like for restaurants, it's like Silicon Valley for fat people. Like you go down there and just like go crazy. That's just like how I was just kind of blown away by the Reading Terminal Market. I think that may have been one of the first times that I had gone somewhere like that. Reading Terminal Market in Philly, if you haven't been. So if you ever find your travels ever take you to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, you should definitely go there. I remember, I did talk about that when I was I did Helium with Chris Hardwick a few years back. So it was cool. And just had a really good time. So many pancake houses down there. I riffed about that on stage, and then they just like everybody had a fit. The first show, there was like 40 people there, and that was fun. And the second show was fun too, but just in a different way, where I was kind of like talking to the crowd more. I was riffing and just trying to have a little more fun, trying to be open with these people as, you know, as a young artist, you know. So it was just, so I riffed and stuff, but it was a really good time. And I went to Bojangles, because I'd been to Bojangles before, but I'd never had the chicken biscuit. And I'm trying to figure out who has the best chicken biscuit. Is it Bojangles or is it Chick-fil-A? And obviously Chick-fil-A has amazing chicken biscuits, but I was impressed by Bojangles. It's kind of a toss up. I mean, if one's across the street from the other, what do you do? I mean, where would you go? You know, I tried to ask Black Twitter, but they didn't seem to respond. But when I tweeted it, the Bojangles corporate site hit me up and they were like, we do. And I gave them my favorite emoji is the praying emoji with the like the little kid praying. I think that's my favorite shit right now. I'm starting to give in a little bit into the emoji world. So that's kind of my favorite thing now. It's just the emoji hands or whatever. Anything else about I don't know. I think there's anything else about Williamsburg that I forgot. Yeah, I don't think, but it was beautiful down there. And actually for the first time had a Doubletree cookie, and it was a good ass cookie. I remember when I was a kid, I would see the commercials, or just growing up, you'd see those, the Doubletree, where you get a fucking cookie every night for free or something. And I was like, where's it? And as my cousin and I were walking out, I saw that they had them like at like a little courtesy desk. And I had one. It was good. Shout out to the front desk at the Doubletree in Williamsburg, Virginia. They give you bottled water for free if you ask for it. And I appreciated that. Went back, came back Sunday and drove up to Maryland, drove up to PG County. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't mention this on my way down on Friday. Like PG is coming up, man. We got a Dave and Buster's. We got like on Pennsylvania Avenue, we got barricades on the street so people can't run across the street and get hit by a car. So that's dope. And it's coming up. I was talking to my parents like within the last, God, like May. I was home in April. I want to say I was home in April. And I didn't notice all those things. I mean, maybe I didn't notice. And we're getting the Sonic, too. I think that's the Richie Marlboro Square or something like that. You know, if real live niggas know, you know what I'm saying? Live niggas know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? so yeah, Sunday, and then my mom helped my parents. They were cooking. My mom made some like chicken, and she put it in a fryer, so we were cooking outside. And my dad was making he made some fried potatoes, and they had ribs, macaroni salad, and vegetables. So that was cool. Like, I wasn't expecting that, but they always like to cook when I come home. And it was just a good time. Got to see my parents, so I was glad about that. And came back and ran some errands. What else did I do? Oh, while I was down, so okay, far as nerd stuff to make the ladies, to make your vaginas dry up, I did find some Captain America Civil War action figures at Walmart. I wasn't going there, but I did kind of go. I needed to get some underwear, and I looked in the toy section. They had Captain America, and they had Iron Man, and which you never see. Like, you never see it on the. You never see it on the. Just online, you never see them in the store. So I got word from Greg Stone. He sent me a text last week. He actually found a Black Panther in captivity, and he got one. One of his connects held it for him, and he got it. And then I think he said Evan Williams, another comic who I did the MTV shoot with, he found a Black Panther. So apparently they're starting to come. So if I can get another Black Panther, I'll be straight. And I'm tempted to get the Bandai one that's like $100. Don't tell my mom. So that was some nerd stuff. So that was pretty cool to see that. And I bought an Iron Man. He was like $20. So kicked it with my parents, came back here. And today, I'll give you some a few movie reviews and some other stuff. Today was kind of bittersweet. So I went back to work, and my original boss of, I would say, 6 years, pretty much 6 years, retired today. And then he retired the same day as the IT guy. That was really cool. Like, the cool ass IT guy retired. And it was just kind of sad, man. Like, they had a cake. They have like cake and champagne, and they have like a boardroom, and in the boardroom and stuff. And it was just like people were talking about him. Like, you know, anybody want to say anything? And it was just kind of like, ah. And I, you know, everybody talks shit about their job, but the one thing I could say about my job is just like, sometimes it could be grueling and brutal and stuff, but for the most part, the people at the company that I work at are pretty, just like, pretty fucking decent and like, just solid salt of the earth people. And they make having to do that job a lot easier, more so than other places that I've been, I would say. So that was kind of sad. So I got to walk my boss out, because he was helping him. Me and another coworker were helping him carry some stuff to his car. So I got to talk to him a little bit, and I thanked him for stuff, everything. And then like another boss that retired, she came back to, you know, see those two guys off. So I got to talk to her, got to thank her and stuff. And because I feel like you should give people their flowers while they can still smell them, you know. You can't, and even if they're leaving, you just tell them. And then if they, shit. So that was cool. It's gonna fucking suck though. Like, the new guy taking over his spot is a cool dude. That guy was the first person I would see, because he would get there every day earlier than everybody. He was like the first person there in the department, and I would see him, wave at him, give him a salute. Sometimes we would talk about TV shows and stuff. But yeah, it's gonna fucking suck. It's gonna take some time to get used to, and then like after like a month, it'll be like he wasn't there. Oh, remember when, you know, he was here and all that shit. So then they'll probably start blaming old shit on him. like they always do. Oh, so-and-so, the person that left is the guy that's whose fault it is. So that was a bittersweet. Today was a little bittersweet. So what's going on in the news? So we got this this rare gorilla, Harambe, the silverback gorilla that got killed on Saturday, I want to say, in Cincinnati, the most racist cop town in America, one of them. I remember if you were a fan of this podcast, maybe a year or two ago when Don Will was on and he was talking about Cincinnati. I just got a text from somebody that you think like, hey, can you do this thing? And you're like, yeah, I can do this thing. And then they're like, and then you're like, okay. Then it might not be so, then it might not be, but then if it isn't, hey, let's not even worry about that. I'm doing a podcast right now and I shouldn't have even been looking at a text that I got. All right, you guys. All right. So it's sad, like, you know, the homie Mike Lawrence said it best, you know, you could be sad that the gorilla got killed, and you could be sad that you could be happy that the kid's okay. It's okay to have more than one feeling about the same thing. You can have, you know, it's fine. But then people were, you know, countless people say, oh, y'all don't care about animals more than you care about the humans. And I didn't realize, I thought, because I was looking at the video clip on Twitter that somebody posted and I retweeted it. I didn't know it was a black kid, and it shouldn't matter. But I mean, so I was like, damn, I was like, this is fucked up. Like the way this gorilla, this 400-pound beast was dragging this kid. I was like, oh, my God, this is so scary. And like for 10 minutes, this kid was just, oh, my God, in danger. 4-year-old kid falling into this enclosure. You guys know. And so the zoo employees killed the gorilla instead of tranquilizing him, because it probably would have taken a long time for the effects of the tranquilizers to kick in. And so there's this big online debate. People are sharing posts on Facebook about this, and everybody's so gung-ho about this stuff. And it's like, well, you know, it you got to do what you got to do. And then this morning, Sean King, who's this activist, black activist, was saying that they were showing the kids' parents that were on, the parents of the kid who fell into the enclosure. The kid's okay. And showing their history, like the parents should be charged. And the zoo was like, and the police were like, we're not charging them for anything. It was an accident. And they were saying, oh, they got those kids, all those kids, and yada, yada, yada. And we going, and they showed the dad's like prison record and all of this shit. And you know, if they was black, if they was white, they wouldn't be showing all that shit. But that just that it just is what it is, though. And it's no surprise. And you know that white people care about animals more than they do black people. So I saw one friend on Facebook was like, oh, you know, if that baby was black, they would have shot the baby instead of the gorilla. And then someone was like, well, actually, the kid was black. So that stopped that right there. But yeah, it's just, there's just so much. I guess that's the thing this week. But, you know, because we had Cecil the Lion last year. People were crying over the lion that they didn't know. And the dentist, I think the dentist doesn't have a career. You know, the dentist doesn't even have a career anymore, I think. But, you know, George Zimmerman can sell the fucking gun that he used to kill Trayvon. sell it for hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's no justice. People are signing petitions for this gorilla. You know, there was one lady on Facebook that was like, yeah, she was a zookeeper, and she was like, yeah, they did the right thing. Yeah, sad that this gorilla's dead, but they did the right thing. And she showed a picture of her with the same type of gorilla, and she was like, look at me feeding this gorilla with caution. You know, so it's fucked up, man. But I would go back to what Mike Lawrence said. You can be sad about the gorilla, and you can be glad that kid is okay. So, I mean, that's it. It is what it is, man. Like, that's kind of like why I say that. What else? A thing that, you know, guys, I think we have a prison bay to be excited about. Was this Jeremy Meeks guy? Was he initially prison bay? I know he was a light skinned guy with the light eyes, and they were giving him a modeling contract and all that shit. Now there's a girl, a woman, Sarah Seawright, is she from Arkansas? Yeah, she's from Arkansas. And she took this mugshot where she just looks like an Instagram model. She's gorgeous. And I'm looking at, and she, like, what's her rap sheet? 24, Arkansas Online reports, 24-year-old Sarah Seawright of Little Rock is prison bay. She was arrested on April 28th and booked into Pulaski County Jail after failing to appear in court for a 2014 careless driving charge, reports Arkansas Online, signing jail records. She previously been accused of robbery, kidnapping, and battery as a result of a lot theft in 2012. Like, this girl is bad. Like, you would wonder, like, why is she committing these crimes, where it's like, why aren't you just working at Hooters until you... That's, I shouldn't have just like limited her to work at Hooters, but why are you robbing people when you could just be, you could be modeling, you could be doing some acting, you could be, you know, making money off of your looks. Like, she is a stunner. Like, there's candids of her. So they got a Facebook picture of her. Oh, she's, I don't think you can, I think her Facebook page is shut down. But she is bad. And you just wonder, like, what kind of life are you? I mean, it is Arkansas. I don't want to shit on people from, I shouldn't have said that. There's something that she could be doing. Meeks gained fame from his mugshot and started to put it to use once he was released from prison this March. Meeks' agent, Jim Jordan, told BuzzFeed in March there were talks of a reality TV series for Meeks as well as movie deals. The same might be true for Seawright, who is out on bond and enjoying being inducted into the Mugshot Hall of Fame. Reports Arkansas Online, adding that Seawright wasn't listed on the jail roster Friday. Arkansas Online says it's unclear when she was released. She just looks like one of those girls you superficially follow on Twitter or Facebook. And if she was a Hooters girl, like, she would be, oh my God, she's gorgeous, man. I don't get, like, why do hot people commit crimes? It's like, what are you doing? You're hot. What are you doing with your life? You're wasting your superpower. I mean, seriously. I don't get it. What else do I want to talk about? Did I have some other stuff? I feel like I did. It would be nice if I, like, just didn't pause as I'm recording a podcast. That's like bad. That's bad podcasting right there. There was a shooting at a at a T.I. concert. Troy Ave got brought up on charges on attempted murder. What does it say? Because it came on the news this morning. Gun using found in Troy Ave's car. Gun used in deadly Irving Plaza concert shooting found in minivan of suspect Troy Ave. He had a minivan? One dead and two wounded and recovering. What? Oh, his bodyguard got killed. Shit's fucking crazy, man. The gun can be, yeah. So this is an ongoing thing, and I wonder if his street cred is going up now. I'm assuming it would. I don't know. And there are people arguing on Twitter about. They said, "Oh, rap music is the cause of this," and that was a big brouhaha because someone said that rap music's the problem. And then that guy kind of got dragged. I don't really want to talk about all that because I know some of the people involved. But it's interesting how some certain people profit off of the hip hop culture, and then they immediately fade into the background when an issue, something like this, happens or is critiqued. They disappear into the hedges like that Homer Simpson gif. And then culture vultures. Is that a thing? I feel like I've heard that somewhere before. It's like this big thing of what's cool now is for white people to take the shit that black people do. And because that black people made famous, that black people are great at, and then when they do it, it's watered down and it's made to the it's geared towards the masses. It's geared towards white people so that they can consume it better without any like, I don't know, without fear or without any, I don't even know, but you get what I'm saying. Somebody sent me a clip of Anne Hathaway and James Corden freestyle battling each other on that the Late Late Show or something, and it was kind of like, and I like me some Anne Hathaway, young. I ain't gonna front. I like Anne. When everybody was talking shit about her, I was like, nah, young, I like me some Anne Hathaway. She's just an enjoyable actress. I like The Intern. The Intern was a, and I think I spoke on it, The Intern was a sweet movie. It's definitely like one of those corny, sappy ass movies, but the shit was enjoyable. I was like, I rented that shit on demand. I was like, man, I like that joke, man. Made me feel good. I was entertained. But she was freestyle battling it, and it was cute, and it was actually funny, but it was just like, man, like, they couldn't just get a black person to do that? And so it's just kind of like, and I see this, and I see stuff like Hamilton, and it's not a knock against Lin-Manuel Miranda, you know, who's a talented dude, but the way that white people are going crazy over Hamilton, but they don't know, I mean, they don't respect hip-hop. I mean, they don't respect where it really came from. And I'm thinking hip-hop's been around for what, like 40 years now, and it drives so much of Madison Avenue of advertisement. This is me sticking my toe into a water that I didn't think I was going to get into, but it's just like, it's annoying, and black people are getting pissed off. And I see it happen. This has been bubbling for ever since I started the podcast. A lot of the people that I've talked to, people of color that I've talked to on the show, they mentioned this in some form or another. I got a text from someone, a comic, yesterday, like, why do they keep doing this, man? And it's just frustrating. And that's how you get to Oscar So White or starring John Cho, for example. You know, people are tired of that shit. And they show, like, Aziz Ansari talking about it. And it's funny. I got to get Josh Homer on here. I'm in talks with him. I posted something about, I forget what I posted, but it was something like, something about like Asian actors, or yeah, it was something like the New York Times did a piece on Asian actors and stuff like that, and why they weren't being used and blah blah blah. And the homie Josh Homer was like, "Yeah, they're like, oh, there's no diversity. Give me a show, and then the minority will have a white love interest." And it's like, damn, like I would. And I think I would be, you could have whoever the fuck you want to have in your, on your show and cast whoever you want. But I've noticed there is a definitely, because I've noticed that shit too. And he just brought it to light where it was like, yeah, you get a show. It's like if I get a show, I'm like, oh, there's no diversity. And then I get a show and then my love interest is a white girl. And like, that's all I date on the show. You know, like it would just make me cognizant. Like it'd be like, if I got this show, man, I would want my love interest to probably be a sister, probably be, you know, black chick. I don't know, man. Like that's something. That's something to think about. Yeah. So it's a big thing, but I'm glad that it's in the discussion. I'm glad that it's something that's being made more prevalent and people are talking about it. So that's always a good thing. But definitely people, the culture vultures coming in and taking, cherry picking what they like about the culture and then turning on it as soon as things become inconvenient. I'm not saying murder is more than an inconvenient thing, but you know, you can't just blame assholes for, you know, somebody killing somebody, you know, that person that's like trying to kill somebody, like that's that person. That's not hip hop, because this country was founded on violence. This is a violent ass country. A lot of the things that got done were done via somebody choking the shit out of somebody or shooting somebody, blowing somebody's head off. That's how we got to have our fucking apartments and all that, all this creating the phones, all this, people had to die. You ever see somebody's big ass house and wondered what happened for them to get it? Like whose throats did they slash? Not even like just metaphorically or just like what is it, figuratively? And like, how did they get there? Whose backs did they have to step on to get to that position? I don't know. It's just a Pandora's box, you guys. Yeah, so I found that, and people were going back and forth on Twitter. I remember that was Friday afternoon, seeing all that, and you know, like people, there was no shooting at Straight Outta Compton. There was a shooting at a screening of Trainwreck, though. The white guy did it. There was no, was that white kid, white supremacist kid, Dylan Roof, was he listening to rap music? Probably not, when he killed those people in South Carolina. Nope. People weren't listening to rap, and, you know, you can go on and on and on. So I'm annoyed by that, man. I am annoyed. All right. So what else I can talk about? Let's talk about movies. How far are we into this thing? How much have I babbled so far? 39 minutes, you guys. All right. So we talked about The Gorilla. We talked about Prison Bay. Let's talk about movies. So I actually just came from a movie today. After work, I went to go see this movie called The Lobster with Colin Farrell, John C. Reilly, and Rachel Weisz, one of my favorite aging white starlets. I got to get a name for that. I don't know what you would. She's not a starlet anymore. She's an Oscar winner. I mean, can you even say that Brie Larson is a white starlet? Delicate white angel? I don't know. So The Lobster is, I'll read the blurb. In a dystopian society, single people must find a mate within 45 days or be transformed into an animal of their choice. And that's basically, that's it. That's what it is. Colin Farrell is the lead, and he's this dude. And it's a good movie. I like that it's original, and it's just they're going for something different. They're trying to be innovative, and it definitely had first of all, I love the way it was shot. I love the way just everything was staged. It was just like it's a good looking film. It's kind of, I don't know what you call that, sepia. It's not sepia toned, but it's just, I like the cinematography. I liked how, I liked pretty much everything about it. It was funny. Although when I saw it, I saw this at Westchester in Hartsdale, New York. And this is like super at Bowtie Cinema on Tuesday. They have Super Tuesdays where the movie tickets are $6. So a lot of times when I go to this theater, it's mainly senior citizens, middle age, and they pretty much go see whatever is playing there. That's what I'm assuming. And I don't think they have any patience. Now, I saw this movie and I liked it. And when it went off, this is the worst movie I've ever seen. And that happened the one time when I went to, at that same theater, I went to see this Juliette Binoche and Kristen Stewart movie called The Clouds of Sils Marie. And it was just like, it had some moments, but it was just like, what the fuck is this kind of? And they're like, what is this? Like, they don't. I think when you get to a certain age, you kind of regress back to being a kid where you just have no filter. And they were just basically like, what is this? This is the worst thing. I would say this movie definitely lost steam, and it seemed like it lost steam towards the end. And I got what they were doing. But it was just kind of like, okay, all right. When are you guys gonna bring this home? But it's a solid movie. I would say it's not something you need to go see in the theater. If you want to see like some adult weird indie, if you want to see an artsy movie, and if you don't want to see any sequels or superhero movies, you should check this out. I would see this next movie that I was talking about before this. I would say The Nice Guys, which I really enjoyed. And this was, The Nice Guys was basically about these two private investigators joining up, played by Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling. They're in the late 70s trying to find out who killed a porn star who was murdered. And it was good. It was funny, violent, very violent, very brutal, but it was really funny. I love the chemistry that Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe had together. The only thing I would just say, this movie suffered from the trailer having so much in the trailer that, you know, like that they would have earned and gotten the laughs, even if, I don't know, how do I want to say it? it was just like the trailer was just showing too much. And so by the time it came into the movie, by the time I saw it, it was just like, damn, that would have been so much better if you didn't fucking show me that in the trailer and the previews. It's like, I don't know. It was kind of annoying, but definitely, it's definitely worth seeing. I would say that's the funniest movie I've seen this year. So Melissa McCarthy has gotten knocked off the throne from having the funniest movie of the year, because The Boss at that time, and the time The Boss was not as good as Spy, but it was good. It was more sweet than funny, you know, I would say. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed The Nice Guys. I went and saw it while I was in Williamsburg, and at this chain called the Movie Tavern, which is kind of like the Arlington Draft House. You know, you just full service. You hit, there's a little buzzer you hit, and a server will bring you food. I just got candy and water. But Jimmy Merritt said that he went to see X-Men Apocalypse, and he had breakfast. So he had brunch, and he said it was good. So the next time I'm down there, God willing, I'll try the food down there. So, and it's cool because it keeps, what I like about that place, I noticed just a lot of people that were working. So it looks like it's keeping people employed. You know, the servers, and, you know, I was like, damn, why do I need somebody to bring me M&Ms or water? But I was like, what are you going to do? At least people are working and they're making money. Plus the movie ticket was like $10. In a nice, very nice theater. So that's definitely the spot that I'll check for every time I'm down there when I want to see a movie. Yeah, so I enjoyed that. The Lobster was enjoyable. I would say, shit, A minus, B plus for The Lobster, A for The Nice Guys. So if you're a nerd like me, you would probably see, you'd probably see The Lobster eventually, but it's definitely, when it comes out on demand or something, it's definitely one that you could check out, and you'd be like, all right, I was entertained. Also, yesterday I found out that the Anthony Weiner documentary that everybody's been buzzing about, that I've been seeing like online, I've been seeing a couple people on Facebook talk about it. Anthony Weiner was involved in one of the biggest, what do you say, like biggest political scandals of, you know, sexting people, and got in trouble. He got found out, and he ran for mayor in 2000. Ooh, is it 2013? Whenever de Blasio ran, 2011? Ugh. I don't know. It was... Shit, I'm trying to look at this review. Shit, man. Yes, okay, you recall in 2011, Weiner got caught texting pictures to a woman of the very part of his anatomy for which he spent a lifetime trying, owning his name to blah, 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 blah. I really liked it. It's really good. It's on demand. It was what hit me to it was, I know, no, another comic was talking about it, and I think I saw like a tweet or something. Oh, I was looking at movie schedules at one of my favorite movie theaters in this area, the Jacob Burns Film Center. It was playing there. I was like, oh, is that something I want to see at in the theaters? I want to see that doc. And I was like, you know what? Let me see if it's on demand. So I saw that it was on demand for like $7, so I went ahead and rented it. But yeah, it was good. His wife, what's his wife's name? His wife's name's Uma. Hold on a second. Anthony. His wife is Huma Abedin. I hope I'm saying that right. She used to be, I think she's still Hillary Clinton's right-hand woman. like Hillary was quoted saying something along the lines of, you know, Chelsea is my daughter, but Huma is my other daughter, like my second daughter, or just as close or whatever. Beautiful woman. She is the, and I tweeted this, guys. She's the epitome of what a ride or die chick is. She is literally the good wife. Like the shit that she put up through with this dude, his fuck ups, and she's got to stand there. She doesn't have to. I mean, they have a kid together and they're still married, but it was pretty interesting that she stayed. You know, you got to wonder, like, if you were in that situation, would you do the same thing? But she's a G. Like, she's remarkable. And you could just see the look on her face in some scenes where he's explaining stuff to somebody else or he's talking. She's just like, this motherfucker, like, really? Just looking at him like, really, nigga? You really doing this, man? Come on. Overall, really good movie. And it's fucked up because, you know, the first 2 minutes into this thing, it's like, damn, this guy is good. Like, if he could have had his sexting under control, like, the dude would be mayor. He'd probably be mayor, or he'd still be in Congress, you know? Like, he was really good at his job, and he wasn't afraid of anybody. And that shame that he's, like, shamed for sending these fucking texts and going crazy on social media with these broads out here, young. And then what I didn't like, okay, obviously he fucked up, but what I didn't like was when he was running. So he's running and people will try to, well, people did. Ah, oh, what's the word? Oh my God. Why am I so bad at this? People were being condescending about, you know, his fuck up. So we know he fucked up. And so now people are like just keep constantly throwing it in his face. And he's you got to give Anthony Weiner some props for having that mental fortitude to keep pushing through and running, even though, you know, he knew he had his detractors, and rightfully so. But the way he kept pushing through all this was pretty, I don't know if I could do that. But yeah, people were being very condescending and just definitely on their moral high horse when that's the easiest thing to do, easiest thing for them to do. And it just didn't seem like it really made, like, they didn't really have it. It just didn't seem like, they were gonna, what do you gain by that? I guess making yourself feel better. What you did was wrong. What is your wife gonna say? Well, she's still with him. They were just being assholes, and I don't know. But he did, I like the way he said something like, well, I don't want to give it away, but it's definitely a really good, obviously he didn't win, de Blasio was the mayor, but it was definitely a really good doc. Another documentary I saw was The Art of Organized Noise, about the production team behind Outkast, Goody Mob. They pretty much pioneered the Dirty South movement in hip hop, and it was really good. It just explained how they came to be and the stuff that they went through and then what they're currently going through. And obviously Outkast was the group that arose from the Dungeon Family. And, you know, they talked about their origin stories, and it was great because I didn't know much about them. I knew a little bit about Outkast, and it made me go back, and I bought like I bought Southern Playlistic, Cadillac Music. What else did I get? I bought Aquemini and AT Aliens. And I think I may have bought Stankonia. I bought the CDs. And when you buy a CD from Amazon, sometimes they have the auto rip. So once you buy the CD, you can get the auto rip and you download it to your playlist or your iTunes or whatever. And so on my way home yesterday, I was listening to the Outkast, and I was just like, damn, these guys were great. And I always knew they were great, but I just never, I didn't wrap my brain around it as much as I should have. Or just like, I still knew when some of the songs would come on, I'd be like, oh yeah, yeah, I remember this. And I was rapping along. And it's like, sometimes you forget, like, why isn't Andre in my top 10? But then I think Rod from the Black Eye Who Tips mentioned this years ago, where he said something like, Andre 3000 is like the deadbeat dad that comes around and drops a dope verse every now and then, like the deadbeat dad comes around and buys you a shit ton of toys, and then he just goes away. Because like when he spits, there's literally no one like him. And he's definitely this amazing MC, but you just don't get that much of him. He only gives you a little bit. Just a super talented guy. And there was this thing, this post that everybody was kind of going apeshit over a couple of weeks ago, and I finally watched it. I don't know if it was, I remember what it was from. I'm going to scroll down on my Facebook and try to find it. Shit. Hey, when I'm trying to find something. I didn't know. I hate this, man. Like, I'm trying to find this thing. Okay, it was a YouTube clip, Rapping Deconstructed, the best rhymers of all time. And it was this, it's this clip. How long is it? It's like a 12-minute clip.
A few weeks ago, I interviewed...
And you can hear this girl from Vox, from Vox, .com. And, like, she just basically breaks down... Here's how some of the greatest rappers make rhymes. And they had MF Doom. They had Mos Def. Andre 3000, I believe. And they just talked about what it takes for them, how their bars go up, and how they had Biggie on there. And just the way that they rap, the way that it's pretty dope. And it just was sort of like how she was a, what did I say on this thing? I said, some of you nerds posted this clip last week. I'm just getting around to it. I can't front. I enjoyed the white girl breaking down rhyme schemes. So, yeah, it was really cool. She was talking like she was this anthropologist. And in a way, she was. She was extracting, this stuff. And I don't know if is that the right thing. I don't know if that's the right word, calling her an anthropologist, but... It was definitely, I don't know. Yeah, but I feel some kind of way. One of my homies, I got one of my best friends in the world, his voice in my head. Why I had to be a white girl talking about that shit? Couldn't find no sis to talk about it like that. But it actually is dope. And, it's funny, but it was really good. And it just, the Art of Organized Noise was great. They had some really great stories about how, like, when I remember Outkast coming on the scene with Players Ball. And like most, and I knew the story that Players Ball was on a LaFace Christmas album. And you would think, like, why the fuck would Players Ball be on a Christmas album? And they talked about the origin behind that and how the group Outkast, Dre and Big Boy and the team was like, yo, y'all putting us behind the eight ball with this, telling us to make a Christmas album. And the way that they did it, and I didn't know that Diddy recorded it, and they just kind of broke it down, and it was like that song... made them, essentially made them who they are, or it broke them, rather. And I was listening to it, the music and it in the car, and it still holds up. Like, these guys were doing it 20 fucking years ago. And I remember I was in seventh or eighth grade. I was in 94. I was in eighth grade. So I was like 14 years old. And remembering getting that tape, I had the tape, and I think I either had an Iverson Mall, there were two record stores, and I don't know. I know there was this expensive ass Sam Goody. I'm not sure if Waxy Maxy's was the second store, but either way, one of them I couldn't get the tape in, and then the other one they let me get it. Or there was one time where my dad had to get it for me or something. But I remember that and having that tape, you know. You need to get up, get out, and get something. Don't let them days of your life pass by. Or the days of them days. I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, man. So, Outkast, man. So I was just kind of reminiscing. And my CDs came today. So, yeah, man. Outkast, legendary hip-hop group. They got to be up there. They got to be one of the greatest hip-hop groups of all time. Was it something else? Oh, TV. I didn't talk about this last week. I did not talk about Maria Bamford's Lady Dynamite, which I think is terrific. It's base. It's a low-key, semi-autobiographical Netflix series about Maria Bamford. And she's one of my, I would say Maria Bamford's one of my favorite comics, just the way that she deals with her issues, her personal issues on stage, how she makes that into art. I think there's no, she's very unique. There's nobody like her. And I'm going to, make her show about me. I got to, and the longtime listeners know that I opened, I had to follow her at, speaking of Philly, I had to follow her at Helium in Philly because I was opening for Chris Hardwick and Maria Bamford was doing a one-nighter on that Sunday. And I had to follow her, and that was one of my first big tests as a comic, like to follow this fucking monster. And I had to follow her, and I had a good time or whatever. I did my thing, and I just tweeted like the next day. I was like, oh, so glad that I got to share the stage with Maria Bamford on the Nerdist show or whatever. And she's like, oh, you were so funny, Chris. My boyfriend and I loved it, thought you were hilarious. And that was like the shit. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, Maria Bamford, Lady Dynamite. I don't think I've seen anything like it. There's definitely an Arrested Development vibe because you got Hurwitz working on it. But otherwise, it's pretty like avant-garde. I mean, it's definitely a formula to certain things, but it's kind of like genre bending. There's some, you know, it's weird, but you could still follow it. I'm probably going to have to look at it again because I just sort of binged on it last week. And I feel like I took a lot of stuff in. But yeah, Maria Bamford's great. I love her stand up and I enjoy what she does. So I would highly recommend that. And I think for the most part, yeah, that's all I wanted to talk about. And I would say like Lobster, you know, what I was thinking about, what I didn't say earlier was the fact that the Lobster, even though it was unique, it reminded me of some different, I felt like there were some holes in it. I probably got to talk to Andrew Short about it because I think he saw it too. And we were texting about it. So I just have to rethink about some things, but it sort of reminded me of this movie called The East by Zalbat Manglij and Britt Marling. It definitely had some elements of that. So I enjoyed those. Oh, I want to give you some plugs this weekend. La, 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 la. It would be helpful if I already had that open, but I didn't. I'm going to be on June 4th. I'm going to be at the Gotham Comedy Club at 11 p.m. I'll be at Ha Comedy Club in Yonkers, New York on June 15th, 8 and 10 p.m. As they said, the club is opening, so I'm going to be there doing some spots. June 18th, 10th Street Live, Kenilworth, New Jersey, 9 o'clock p.m. That's always fun. The GQ comedy show. I'm excited about that because it's in Jersey. And all I have to do is go down the Garden State Parkway for a little bit and have a good time. Maybe go to Walmart after. So always a good time doing a 10th Street, doing 10th Street Live. June 24th, I'll be at the Standing Room in Long Island City at 8 and 10 p.m. Big, big show. That's a J.L. Covan's album recording, his CD recording, rather. That's going to be a lot of fun. Please get tickets to that. It's going to be fun. I'm opening two shows. It's going to be dope. And J.L. always brings the business. So come to that. And I will be at, in August 14th, I'll be at the Cellar Door headlining in Frederick, Maryland, in my old college town. So technically, Emmitsburg, Maryland is my college town. But when we wanted to hang out, we go to Frederick, Maryland to go to the mall, go to the movies, and get food and shit. So, also, check me out on episode 9 of the Two Dope Girls podcast with Phoebe Robinson and Jessica Williams of The Daily Show. It was really fun. I recorded that set in December of last year and had a good time doing it. And they put me on. So thanks to Phoebe and Jessica. Some of the stuff that I was talking about was kind of heavy, and I've been getting some pretty good feedback from it. Not like it's like, oh, this is so edgy, but it was kind of for a Brooklyn crowd in some regard. It was a little some of the subject matter was touchy, but some people were getting into it, and if the folks that didn't like it, they did not tweet at me directly. It was pretty cool to get the nice feedback from the folks that did enjoy it. So if you haven't heard me do stand up before, that's definitely a place to hear some stuff. You can listen to the bonus episode of the show where I did OMG. What the hell was the name of the show? Oh my God, Chris, are you serious? I was blabbing about that show for so long. Low Standards with John and Matt at Videology. So that was like a month ago, in March, 2 months ago. Almost 3 months ago now, right? March, April, May, June? Yeah, something like that. So that was a few months. That was in March. So check that out, man. Two Dope Queens, Good Times. And that's the end of the show, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Oh, geez. NBA Finals, Cavs and Warriors on Thursday. How about that? Rematch. I think the Cavs are going to win in 5. Or 6. 5 Cavs in 5 or 6. I think, this is my prediction. If Kevin Love and Kyrie step up to the plate, if Kevin Love can get into the post a little bit, they make some shots. It's just the championship rides on Kyrie and Kevin. If they can do what they're supposed to do at that high level, then I think the Warriors can be beat. I think the Cavs can do it. LeBron is going to show up. LeBron's going to do what he needs to do. He, as always, I really hope he brings this home for Cleveland, and hopefully they'll leave him alone. And I say this every week, but I was talking to some people at work in the cafeteria. I was like, look, if Kyrie and Kevin do what they're supposed to do, it's going to be all right. LeBron is always going to deliver. And so I'm hoping that they do this. It's probably best that I'm not. I'm just hoping if I fall asleep during this thing that just go Cavs, all in 2016, all in 216 or whatever. Go Cavs. That's the end of the show this time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I appreciate y'all. Peace.